Welcome, everyone. You are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. With me on the phone, Yves Engler. Yves is a Montreal-based activist and author. He has published 9 books so far, among them a book focused on Palestine-Israel called Canada and Israel Building Apartheid. So today we will focus on Canada, more specifically on the Canadian Parliamentary Association and groups. So we have 17 in Canada, and they're very influential when it comes to Canadian politics. One of them is called Canada-Israel Interparliamentary Group. And so that's a very important group when it comes to relationship between Canada and Israel and the influence that lobbyists could have on a member of the parliament in Canada. So this is why when I discuss the system of association and groups in the Parliament of Canada. Also, why we're discussing this subject, because we have a new group that was formed, also a parliamentary group focused on Palestine this time. It's called Canada-Palestine Parliamentary Friendship Group. So it's different from the other 17 official group in the parliament. And this is what we're going to discuss with Eve, why this group is different than the others, and also what that difference shows when it comes to the view of the parliament and the MPs here in Canada when it comes to their views on Israel-Palestine, but also how the system of association or group in the parliament reflect about the international kind of relations of powers in the world, not only in Canada. Our guest Eve wrote about all the issues I'm mentioning in a new article that was published back in December in 2017, so a few months ago, published on his website, eveengler.com. The article was called Ottawa's Foreign Policy Swamp, an Unhealthy Quagmire. In this article, he talks about all the issues I mentioned and everything we're going to kind of discuss during the interview. So first of all, thank you, Eve, for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess, I mean, I'm briefly, very briefly kind of introduced, but I guess for our listeners to understand more what I'm talking about, can you maybe explain to us what are these associations I'm talking about, these parliamentary association and interparliamentary groups that we're talking about? As I mentioned, there are 17 within the Parliament of Canada. So can you explain to us what are these groups? How are they supported? What is their role in general?
Yeah, so there's 17 different internationally focused parliamentary groups that have official standing. The official groups receive some public funding. They have officials that take care of logistics and stuff like that. I think it's about a $4.5 million public budget set aside for the sort of logistics of organizing these associations. Basically, the associations generally reflect the imbalance of power in our world. So about half the associations are focused on European countries like the Canada-England parliamentary group, the Canada-Italy parliamentary group. Obviously, there's one with the U.S. And all of the continent of Africa, all 54 countries, there's one association focused on Africa, whereas there's, 8 focused on Europe. So they generally reflect the kind of power imbalances in our world. And particularly germane for this conversation, it's particularly stark with regards to the Israel versus Palestine. So since 1981, there's been a Canada-Israel interparliamentary group that's official organization that has funding from the government to operate. And it has about, towards 50 MPs that are part of it. And it basically, operates on a pro-Israel line. It acts as a conduit of information on the subject and generally, sticking to the Israeli government's line. Last year, I guess about 10 months ago, the Palestine parliamentary friendship group was reestablished. It was established in 2007, and because it's not an official group, it doesn't have funding from the government. So it's more like volunteer initiative by MPs, and so it was reestablished, reset up summer of last year, and it has, I believe, 9 MPs that are part of it, mostly Liberal MPs, one NDP MP, and the head of the Green Party, Elizabeth May, MP from Victoria, and its objective is broadly to try to support the Palestinian perspective on the conflict, and so basically, I think that these parliamentary associations, like I said, they reflect the broader power imbalances in our world, and you know, particularly with regards to Palestine, because if you were operating in an equitable world, it wouldn't be the Israel parliamentary group that would receive public funding; it would be the Palestinian solidarity group, because as we know, the media is already generally pro-Israel. There's many pro-Israel organizations in this country that get out the pro-Israel perspective. So in a, you know, an equitable world, you would want to subsidize the parliamentary association that's trying to counterbalance or to provide a different perspective, i.e. the Palestine group. But that's not what actually happens, and it's just, you know, one more example among many of the pro Zionist perspective in Canadian political culture.
So just to understand maybe concretely, so what these association and groups, what do they do? How do they concretely affect the opinions of the MPs? Do they organize events? What do they do?
Yeah, there's some events organized, there's information shared with the MPs. They're sort of associated with, they tend to be part of their conduits for lobbying visits. So the two NDP MPs that are part of the Israel Interparliamentary Group, they were both Randall Garrison and Murray Rankin, both BC NDP MPs. They both went to Israel with the on a visit. I believe it was about a year and a half ago, with the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, the main pro-Israel lobbying organization in this country. So this CJIA funded them to go. And disproportionately, the MPs that go on CJIA trips to Israel, and of course, for many years, Israel has been either the main or the second biggest destination for paid lobbying visits by MPs, alongside Taiwan. Mm-hmm. Israel and Taiwan are the two places that MPs most often go on these international delegations, sponsored by CJIA. So they would, the MPs that are part of the Interparliamentary Association would be the ones most likely to go on these visits. And if you look at the politics of the two NDP MPs on the Israel parliamentary group, they were both aggressive against the recent effort to pass what was called the Palestine resolution at the NDP convention, which was a pretty modest resolution calling for boycott of settlement products. I wouldn't exaggerate. I see these parliamentary associations just sort of one fairly small cog in a much broader political dynamic. These associations are not what convincing MPs to be pro-Israel, but it's one more venue, one more vehicle to push in a certain direction. Obviously, you know, the plethora of different organizations, from like I mentioned, CJIA, to a group like B'nai B'rith, to an organization like Honest Reporting Canada that puts pressure on media that says anything in favor of Palestinian rights, or an organization like the Friends of Simon Wiesenthal Center, the organizations that promote Israel in all different facets of Canadian political culture. The parliamentary associations are just one, you know, piece in a much broader lobbying and political dynamic that should be discussed and put pressure. And for instance, with the NDP MPs, they both should be called, and there's been a bit of pressure for them to remove themselves from the Israel parliamentary group.
So as you mentioned, very recently, a new group was relaunched, which was focused on Palestine, called the Canada-Palestine Parliamentary Friendship Group. And this group is not part of the 17, so it's not funded by the government of Canada, as you mentioned. Now, one thing I thought was interesting, they say, as a description, I guess, from this group, and this is according to Canada Talk Israel-Palestine, they say that this group, this new group, quote, seeks to understand the perspectives of the various groups that make up all Palestinian people, regardless of their geographical location. I guess I want to ask how important that is, because it's very openly talking about Palestinians, not only in the occupied West Bank and Gaza, but also, you know, the refugees and Jerusalem and so on. So how do you think that's important, I guess? And what does it signify, what this formation of this group signify when it comes to maybe Canadian politics view on Palestine?
I think it's obviously it's a sign of the narrowness and the pro Zionist nature of our political discussion and culture in this country, that we focus the issue very narrowly, generally, on just the question of the 67 occupation, and they don't look broader at the Nakba, at the dispossession, at the, you know, the ethnic cleansing of 47, 48. And I think that it's important if you're going to be serious about challenging Canadian complicity in Palestinian dispossession. I think it's important to go way beyond just the sort of narrow peace process 67 kind of discussion. But I think it's a good thing that the Parliamentary Friendship Group is taking a broader a mandate. It's obviously a very uphill battle. Even 67, even the NDP wasn't even willing to, the leadership of the NDP, the membership seemed very supportive. It was quite a battle at the recent NDP convention, but the leadership's not even willing to boycott settlement products. So even though it's been a legal occupation according to international law and basically the whole world, including the official Canadian government position, you know, in practice they don't actually adhere to it, but the official Canadian government position, 51 years later, and the NDP is still not willing to boycott products coming from the settlement. So to broaden out the analysis and also include refugees is obviously an uphill political battle, but it's an important political battle. And I think the reestablishment of the Palestinian Parliamentary Friendship Group is a positive step. It's MPs, again, this is MPs doing it because they believe in it. They have to put their time, they have to find money to pay for organizing logistics. So the MPs that are part of it are generally, they want to correct the injustices that Canada is, contributing to in terms of Palestinian dispossession. And I think that the reestablishment of the Parliamentary Friendship Committee is also should be seen alongside the recent delegation. There was a recent delegation of 18 MPs to the occupied West Bank, and I believe they also went into Gaza. That was organized by the Association for Parliamentary Friendship of Canada and Palestine, which I think is working alongside the Parliamentary Friendship Group. It's a Palestinian organization, I believe, mostly based in Ottawa. And out of that delegation, there was Elizabeth May. Elizabeth May, who was the head of the Green Party, she had been really bad in terms of trying to block members of the Green Party from passing a resolution in favor of parts of the boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign. She went to the extent, this is about, I guess it's 1 year ago now, she went to the extent of even after the convention, the Green Party convention passed a resolution supportive of parts of the BDS campaign, she called forced a special convention to try to overturn the resolution backed by members. And so Elizabeth May went on this recent delegation to Palestine, and she came back and she said some things about Israel shooting people, peaceful protesters in Gaza, about that, you know, that were strong comments, very forceful comments that were nothing like what Elizabeth May had been saying, and nothing like most other politicians have been saying about Israeli violence and criminality. And within her statements, there's still some stuff she was saying that was kind of confused. I think that, you know, it's the facts on the ground are so overwhelming that when MPs actually go on a delegation to the region, they see that it's pretty clear cut that Israel is the dispossessor and the Palestinians are the dispossessed. So it's a positive step forward on the parliamentary friendship group, but I think that the bigger political fight is taking place outside of just on Parliament Hill, and the whole political culture in this country. It's about really sort of unearthing and opposing the long-standing Canadian complicity in Zionism and Palestinian dispossession.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what I thought was interesting about the article also, and you already mentioned it, looking at this association reflect a lot about, you know, politics in Canada and the interests of politicians in Canada and who's in power or not. Like you mentioned, you have so many associations focused on Europe. You have Germany, France, the UK, Italy, NATO, one about Europe, and then the entire continent of Africa has only one association. And aside from, I guess, Israel-Canada group, there's nothing focused on the Middle East in these associations, at least from what I saw.
No, that's my understanding as well. Maybe some of the North African countries are included in the Africa parliamentary group. I don't believe there is one focus specifically on the Middle East. Mm.
And aside from that, also the other thing that you mentioned that I thought was interesting, you talked about, aside from the association, also it's good to look at programs as well. So you mentioned the Canadian Forces parliamentary program in your article that takes MPs to military training sessions. So can you talk about that? Also, you talk about, you know, the arms industry lobbies. So you talked about all of this side. Is there you know, groups or lobbies that focus on anti-war rhetoric or demilitarization or anything to balance these things out?
No. I mean, there are. I have my most recent book is about the propaganda system in this country, and the biggest public relations entity in this country is the Canadian military. The Canadian military hires hundreds and hundreds. One estimate is 600 and some odd people, full-time employees, just in public relations, just for the Canadian military. Then they fund university programs. There's the parliamentary program. There's also a NATO parliamentary program or parliamentary group. The military has huge amounts of money to, they've flown MPs to Canadian warships operating in the Middle East, and then they give them a tour of the, you know, get to meet all the boys on the ship and give them a little tour so there's no peace organization in this country that has the money to fly MPs to, you know, go to Libya and see the victims of Canadian bombing or fly them to Yemen and show where the, you know, Canadian weapons that are being sold to the Saudi monarchy what those weapons are leading to. It's an incredible imbalance of resources. And so again, it's the same dynamic where it's reflected at every level of the political battle. You have in the dominant media has a strong bias towards the military. Then you have within academia, there's no peace movement that has the ability to spend millions of dollars a year on academic programs like the military does with their security defense forum that funds security programs at 15 or 17 Canadian universities, then at the level of think tanks, right? You have the think tanks, a number of think tanks in this country that are funded by either supported by the military, and more so supported by arms companies. At every different level, you have this incredible imbalance of resources on the side of the militaristic forces in this country. And then there's obviously, of course, this is just the whole the military industry and the actual arms companies. And most of the arms companies have offices within a few blocks of Parliament Hill. These are global. These are companies like Boeing, like General Dynamics. Most of them are American or British or French companies that have Canadian subsidiaries. They all have offices in Ottawa, and they don't have those offices in Ottawa because that's where they're producing the gear. They have those offices in Ottawa because that's where the decisions are made on, you know, who gets funding and spending more on the military. And they have officials that are lobbyists that are paid full time to lobby MPs to support, first of all, their companies and buying from their companies, but secondarily support more spending on the military to try to block efforts to improve regulations on restricting arms sales to countries killing people. So it's an incredible imbalance throughout the different levels of politics of this country in favor of the militarist forces. It's something that's obviously not discussed much in the dominant media because they are generally biased in favor of the militarist perspective.
So I guess how can we counter that? I mean, that's a big question, but if we talk about when after reading the article and talking about all these association and groups and lobbies and kind of getting into the details, it seems such a big, big machine that kind of influence and is very close to the government. How can that be countered when we talk about NGOs and grassroots who maybe don't have the same amount of money and energy and efforts? I don't know. What's your opinion about that? Is it a bleak?
Yeah, I mean, the way it's countered is by, what you're doing right now is using the mediums that we have to get out a different perspective of foreign policy it's not easy. It's a big battle because the power, the institutions of authority and power generally not on our side, if you like, and not on an internationalist or humanist. They're not upholding internationalist or humanist interests. It's activism. There's been ebbs and flows in terms of the activism. There's been times in Canada where the peace movement was very strong. Denuclearization campaigns in the 1980s, where you got demonstrations of tens of thousands of people. Our strength is going towards the people, going to those who don't have a self-interest in selling more weapons, who don't have an interest in seeing Palestinians further victimized. It's people who just have a human conscience, but it's organizing those people into a force, a political force, and the way it's done is through the long-standing methods of activism, which is mostly boils down to hard work, whether it be running a radio show on a community radio station, or organizing a demonstration, or being part of a Palestine solidarity group, or on and on and on. There are different mechanisms to get the word out and to create a counterforce of moral persuasion against the forces of economic and imperial might.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's merit in kind of activists or NGOs spending more time or energy into approaching more parliaments? I know CJPME, which is Canadian for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, they try to do initiative to kind of go talk to parliamentarian and so on. Do you think there's merit to kind of make effort on that level, or it has to be on grassroots?
Mm-hmm. I think it has to be all of the above. Mm-hmm. If it's just happening at the parliamentary level, I don't think it's going to be successful. But if MPs are both you know, having pro-Palestinian groups trying to meet with them and meeting with them in Ottawa, while simultaneously back in their riding, you know, there's a couple hundred people demonstrating against Israel's recent injustice. The chance that they're going to, you know, make a comment or attend a rally or, you know, do something in favor of Palestinian rights goes up. So I think it has to take place at all the levels. You know, some people's political orientation is more focused on lobbying MPs, and some people's orientation is more focused on, you know, getting people into demonstrations. My personal orientation is more towards taking to the street and that level. But if we're gonna shift the tide in this country on the question of Canada's role in dispossessing Palestinians, it's gonna take place at all the levels, from, you know, media work to countering the Zionist propaganda at different elementary schools. I mean, there's campaigns, the pro-Israel groups have these campaigns at Jewish day schools that are basically, you know, teaching kindergarteners about the great stuff that the Israeli Defense Force does. There needs to be organizations that counter that pressure those schools to not be doing that. There needs to be organizations that are countering the media bias in favor of Israel. There needs to be organizations that are and individuals that are countering the pro-Israel parliamentary organization, on and on and on.
Mm-hmm. With us on the phone, Yves Angler. Yves is a Montreal-based activist and author. You can find all his article on his website, yvesangler.com. The article I mentioned, can you tell us the name of the article that we're talking about?
So I have it here. On the website, the title is Ottawa's Foreign Policy Swamp, an Unhealthy Quagmire.
Thank you. And this is on your website, yvesangler.com. So I do invite our listeners to go to the website and read this article. He goes on more in details about all these associations in the parliament and... yes, and what do they symbolize when it comes to relations of powers in Canada and in the world in general? So thank you again, Yves, for talking to us today.
Thanks a lot for having me.
My name is Sausan Kaduran. You are listening to Under the Olive Tree.